Welcome to Keeping It Real with Frankie D, the very first Italian-American podcast and the home of your Italian-American moment. I am your very proud host, Frankie D, and we can be heard at ItalianAmericanLife.com, on iTunes, Stitcher, your podcast app. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and connect with us on LinkedIn. Today, my guest is Michael Savarese, who was the owner of a very popular and well-known restaurant in New York City, and now has become an author, having written a book called My Turn to Buy Gelato. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Frank. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you for being here. You have lived a very interesting and colorful life. And so basically your book, My Turn to Buy Gelato, is about your life, correct?
It is, yes.
And where did your life begin? Tell us.
My life begins, as I say in the book, 6 years before I was born. Because it was at the very deep part of the Second World War. And my parents, they were in pretty good shape financially, but the war completely destroyed them. And then 2 months prior me being born in December of 1945, in October, 2 months before, my father went to check what had happened to his building that had been once his pride and joy, and that building had been destroyed by the bombs. So on his way back, holding my brother, I had an older brother by 9 years, Mario. Going back to the train station, because they were no longer living in Naples, they were refugees. He got hit by a motorcycle, an army, Italian army motorcycle that was, checking the operations of the Americans leaving Italy. And he got hit so bad that he was knocked to the ground and his head. And he had blood, bleeding badly. He was taken to a hospital and he was told not to leave. He stayed overnight. And because there was no way that he could notify his wife, my mother, who lived, by now they'd moved to Barra, a district of Naples, in the outskirts. What he did, he jumped on a push cart drawn by a donkey, and he got home with my brother. And so that's where my life begins in December 15 of 1945.
In Barra,
just before I born.
Barra is an area, a neighborhood in Naples.
Barra is a neighborhood, like in New York City we have the Bronx, we have Queens, we have Brooklyn. Barra is one of the districts.
Correct. Okay. I know one point of the book that I really loved. I loved the whole book, by the way. It was very well written, and it was very real. I enjoyed it. It's a real story about your life. Very interesting. I thought that you conveyed this to the reader very well. I felt like I was there with you. And one Thank section you. That I really enjoyed was the relationship you have with your father. Now, lost sight. Now, did he lose sight completely or partially?
At the time of the accident, the sight was still good, but gradually, by the time I was five and a half, his sight went totally after an ulterior operation that didn't take him anywhere, but got him worse. He completely became blind in 1951. By then, I was like 5 years old.
And you became, what I learned from the book, you became his eyes.
I became his eyes, yes.
Now, at that time, you're such a little boy, did you understand and comprehend, my father really can't see and I have to help him like with everything, and I have to hold his hand and I have to be his eyes. Did you understand that, like really what was happening?
Not entirely, because, you know, I had to be corrected all the time. Like, I, at one point, now I would be defining myself as a seeing idol. I needed instructions. But then, after a while, there was no need for me to talk to my father. He already knew what was happening as we were walking the streets of Naples, as we were dealing with people, as we were sometimes getting documents for people that couldn't leave work, and so we would offer to do it at a fee for a minor
fee. Well,
you know,
actually, that had to make you grow up fast, because
yes.
You just weren't playing with kids, you know, playing soccer in the streets. You had to be this, like you said, almost a seeing eye dog for your father at such a small age, a young age. So
yes. And from the time I was basically 5 and a half, 6 until I left October 2nd of 1962 to come here, I was always with my father. I loved my father. I loved how smart he was. I loved the fact that he knew everything, you know. And one day I said to him, "Papa, how come you know so much?" He said, "When I was a young guy, I used to be very curious, and I would get deep in it. When I was an adult, I read a lot. Now that I am blind, I listen to the radio a lot." And he said, "The world, there is always something to learn. And that's what I want you to do. Never give up your books."
Well, that's very wise.
And that was a good lesson.
Yes.
And that was a good lesson. And, you know, my parents, they lost a child just prior to me being born. As a matter of fact, I always felt that I came into this world to replace my brother Pierino, who had died probably, I want to say, 2.5 years before I was born. And Pierino was this very, very happy child. And, you know, at the table, when there was no television, you know that, Frank, family gathered around the table. And that's when all the stories, you would find out things about the family, things about the neighborhood, things about the war. And really, all there was on the table was bread, maybe soup, and a lot of conversation. And I picked it up. And I have a strong memory. I remember basically a lot of stuff, maybe everything. But word everything is a little too much, but I remember a lot.
Well, no, that's great.
And so, you know, one day,
it was great that people talked. They conversed.
Yes. You know, there is an interaction of with the family, with the people, you know, that you love. Also, we had our very next door neighbors on the same floor, that we became almost like one family. And, you know, I would be in my friend Gigino's house as he was in my house. My sisters, they were spending time with their mother, as they would come over and have lunch with us, dinner with us. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yes.
It was really, really very good. I mean, I had a very happy childhood, even though it was very poor. I didn't even know what wealth meant. But I, you know, we were very happy. We were very respectful. Yeah, we had to be on guard all the time. Whatever we had to watch for it.
But you know what? That's very nice. That's very nice to hear. You don't hear that a lot, that you just had a happy childhood and you were content and it was a good upbringing. Tell me about your restaurant, please. I hate to switch courses, but I want to definitely get in about your restaurant. So you had a restaurant from 1978 to 2010 called Ennio.
2010.
Ennio and Michael.
Ennio was my business partner.
Okay. Was he from Naples as well?
No, he was from Abruzzi.
Oh, okay.
And it was Abruzzese.
And where was the restaurant located? What area of New York?
In Greenwich Village.
Greenwich Village, okay. And
Ennio and Michael, Ristorante.
You had it for 32 years, which is...
32 years.
A very long time in the restaurant business.
Very long time. Yes, you know something about it, right?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. So where did opening a restaurant? You weren't here in this country that long. You were here, you know, about what?
16 years.
14 years.
I've been here 16 years by then.
Was it something that you were just so excited to do? Were you scared? What were you feeling at that point?
Well, I've always been an entrepreneur in my own ways. I always, even today, I experiment with things. I don't settle for just when I buy something that I always try to tweak in my own way. And for me, I even tried computers. I graduated from Albert Merrill School in computer programming. Yet it wasn't for me. I said, I am a people person. I belong in the restaurant. And so I became a waiter. I became a captain of a dining room. Eventually, I opened up with some friends, some other students. We opened up a pizzeria in Parsippany, New Jersey. Do you hear me? Because the video went.
Yes, no, I hear you fine. I hear you fine.
Ah, very good. And we had a pizzeria. So instead of working for other people, we would spend time in the pizzeria, make money. Me and my friend Alino, we would continue schools. And my other partners, they ran most of the operation by themselves, except we worked 2 days a week, me and Lino. So I was always in business. Even when I was working for my cousins, I always had something that I needed to do. Like, can I make that sign better? Can this place be more visible? And then my cousin said, oh, if you think you can do better, do it, try. And that was it. And I always was not happy with something the way it came. I always had to make it my own way.
So your restaurant, tell us, it was pretty popular, correct?
Yes.
You got a lot of famous people coming in.
We had a lot of famous people in. Yeah, we had, and they were not just people that come once. People that came over and over. There were other people that just made one visit, and they liked it. I had the pleasure of serving Frank Sinatra.
That's incredible.
And even when I was a waiter, I was working in this big place in the village, nice place, Joe's restaurant down on McDougal Street. I served in there Zero Mostel. And I'm not good. I served famous playwright. Now the name doesn't come to me. But I served so many people that we wouldn't even pay attention, really. The most famous one in the later part, and I know that my wife especially is not very happy, it's Bill Cosby. He was a customer who came to my place 3-4 times a week.
Is that right? That often?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And Anthony Quinn.
Great actor.
John Ritter.
Love John Ritter.
From Three's Company. Yeah,
yes.
John Ritter.
Son of Tex Ritter.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
So you really made a great go of the restaurant. But
very much. We had a lot
of success. How did you go from success of a restaurant? What pushed you to write a book? Where did this come from?
Well, when the last year that I had the restaurant, the last Christmas, My daughter Christina, the younger of the two, gave me a notebook that said your life story, and was empty pages. And I said, Christina, what is this? She says, Daddy, I have two kids. She had a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. I want to be able to tell them about their grandfather. Can you write a few things in it? I said, okay. When I closed the restaurant, I happened to come upon this notebook, and I started to fill it in. And at one point I said, Jesus, but this is a book. I cannot, my life is a book. I cannot put it in a few lines here. So I wrote the book, and I didn't know what to do with it, because I am a guy that walks 5, 6, 7 miles a day. One day I was walking on Amsterdam Avenue. I'm talking about, I live in the village, talking about like 70, 80 blocks north of me. And I see this place, Rider's Rock. And I said, should I go in? And I said, nothing, it's nothing. I walked by there about 3 times. On the 3rd or 4th time, I said, I gotta go in there. So I said to this young man, I said, excuse me, I have a story that I have written. I would like to have some kind of idea if it's worth anything. The guy said, why don't you bring it to me? And I'll look at it. So I brought it to him. When I sat with him, he goes, Michael, this is a story. I can help you put some order to it. You have a wonderful story. So he decided to take it apart and put it in the sequence that we have in now. And he said, this is your story. I have nothing to do with the wording. It's all you. And that's when the book came out. And because I never went to any agent, I didn't even know how to approach that part. My book, I couldn't find anybody to publish it. And we found Amazon that was able to do it. And you know what? This is a year now. We sold quite a few copies, and I'm still getting checks, actually.
That's great.
Yeah, I still get. I'm getting royalty checks. Still. Pretty good too.
And, so it started out as just a family history for your grandchildren, turned into a book.
Yes.
Well, that's even better.
Yes,
because now you're really from the history. And right. I understand. Is the book in Italian as well? Available, written in Italian.
I just finished it. We finished the translation about 2 months ago, and we also published it on Amazon. But because of this pandemic, especially in Italy, they were having a harder time than we did.
Right.
So Amazon asked me, they will push it once everything calms down. Then they're going to give it a kick. Right now, it's on hold. I got a beautiful write-up on the Neapolitan newspaper, Il Mattino, which is like the New York Times for New York City. And I got a great page. And the lady who did the interview over the phone, we were on the phone about 3 hours. She was just in love with the story.
Well, that's excellent. Are you? Yes. I have a question for you. Are you happy with the book?
Very much.
That's great. And what about, do you still have a sister alive, brother alive?
I have 2 sisters.
And what are they?
One is 81, and the other one is 71. And they both live in Naples. They live actually in the same building, on the same floor, 2 different.
Oh, that's very nice. Have they read the book? Have they read the book?
That's why I translated it.
Oh, okay. So...
the reason why I translate, because when I brought the book to Italy last year, I have a tendency to go every year. I don't know about this year. But when I gave them the book, my older sister, she goes to me, this is beautiful, but what does it mean? I said, oh, gee. I said, you know, Antonietta, give me time, I'm going to translate it. Then while I was doing the translation, I met with Paolo, who had already, I wrote some sports-related stories for his newspaper years ago, like 5 years ago. And I met him by pure chance, and he goes to me, you are a great writer, Mike, you got to write. I said, I wrote a book, Paolo. Oh my God, you gave it to, gotta bring it to me. So I gave him the book and he said, I said, Paul, if I translate, will you help me with the Italian? Because with the English, I'm pretty good. With the Italian, it's a little bit more difficult with the new language. You know, languages, they change. Languages grow. And Paolo was a great help, Paolo Tartamella. As a matter of fact, I say that he translated the book for me, which in a way, I translated the book, but it was the dirty version. He cleaned it up for me.
Very nice. And what about your daughter that started this whole project? Is she happy with it?
Oh my God, yeah.
She gave you a notebook, you gave her a book.
No, I gave her the real book.
Right.
I gave it to the kids. You know, and now when I go there on probably tomorrow, we're going there. Yeah, I'm going to bring them the Italian books.
Very nice.
Even though they can understand it, but
that's okay. One day they will.
One of my granddaughters, she's good in Italian.
That's great.
So that will help her. Yes, that,
for sure, for sure. Well, you are a very fascinating individual, Michael. You are very. You could see. You're very ambitious, you have vision, you go after things, and most of these things happen. So I tip my hat to you very much.
Thank you very much.
And
thank you.
Si vede che sei bravissimo. Tu sei bravo con ogni cosa che vuoi fare, tu puoi essere bravo, secondo me.
E io provo, ci provo, io ci provo.
Abbassa che ci provo, no?
Sì. Si.
Okay, listen, thank you so much for the interview. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Frank. I thoroughly enjoyed
the book. So the book is available on Amazon?
The book is on Amazon, yes. My Turn to Buy Gelato.
My Turn to Buy Gelato. And I'm
and
not
the Italian version.
What's that? I'm sorry.
The Italian version is known as Tocca a me comprare il gelato.
Okay, tocca a me comprare il gelato is the Italian version. So now I don't want to tell the people what that means because this way they got to read the book. Va bene?
Yes. Grazie.
Okay.
Grazie.
Michael, thank you so much. And
thank you for
I highly advise go get this book and read about a real, true Italian. Thank you so much. And to all the listeners, stay proud.